is Road to the Draft with Cal Toomey and Matt Edwards.
Hello, welcome to Road to the Draft, episode 5 for 2018. I'm Cal Toomey. And once again, you might notice the absence of Matt Edwards' voice on the podcast. I think she's enjoyed her Shanghai trip too much and has come back with a little bit of a cold. So hopefully next week Matt will be back. But this week, Mitch Cleary is back after his stunning performance on debut last week. It was John Coleman like last week?
Thanks, Cal. The ratings demanded I was back, so here I am, and looking forward to seeing a few of these TAC Cup results from the weekend, WA trial game. Heaps to look forward to, the Allies squad as well. I'm looking forward to these championships.
Yeah, it'll be fun, and we've got plenty on the plate today. We've also got a straw poll. It's back, the recruiter's straw poll. We've spoken to 5 recruiters today about, I guess, the decision they have to make this year regarding some of the tall players in the top of the draft and how that sort of fits in with how the tall players who've picked over the last few years have gone in the AFL and whether that's a factor in how they look at this year's crop. So we'll chat about that. We've had a good chat with Taran Thomas as well. Talked all about North Melbourne and Next Generation Academy and his progress so far. He's the buzz player for the competition, so great to have him on the show as well. Look, we will start with the performances over the weekend because there are a few standouts. I went and watched some TAC Cup footy on Saturday out at Craigieburn, which is a long way from everything, I must say. Long drive, but it's good to have a couple of games on and a triple header there. In the game that was the best game was Murray v. Dandenong. I'll tell you what, Hudson Gironi, he's on fire. He kicked 7 goals from 13 touches. That's 23 goals from the season so far at TAC Cup level. He's the competition leader. He's a really good player. Look, he's improved his athleticism and is improving it. Still needs a little bit of go with that, but he's a great kick for goal. He's got sticky hands and he's giving himself every shot to be drafted probably later in the piece.
What sort of role do you see him playing in AFL level? And I think speaking to a few people today, suggesting that he will play through the midfield to work on his athleticism after the championships to give himself another string so he can push himself up the draft.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he goes through the championships as well for your country. He's obviously, as we've seen, he's a member of the NAB AFL Academy, and I think that sort of tutoring role for him and just being around some of the best key forwards around the country during those camps has been good for him. He's come out better for that. He's improved his fitness. Look, as I said, I think he needs to improve that athleticism so that when the ball hits the ground, he's more involved, but we'll get there, I think, with him. Bailey Williams is very good. He's a ruckman, the best ruckman in it. Some see him as a key forward, and we'll touch on him shortly as well. 19 touches and a goal, 14 hitouts for Dandenong. Corey Ellison kicked 6 goals for Danny. In the first game of the morning, Curtis Taylor, who I'm a big fan of.
Yep, and everyone you speak to about this kid just says class.
He's classy, yeah, and he plays mainly forward at the moment. He kicked 2 goals from 19 disposals, 7 clearances, so he's probably one of their best for the Cannons, but he's just so smart with the ball. He's Cam Rayner's best mate, so he's obviously got an insight into how it's all going.
Well, the Lions have drafted along those lines in recent times because they went after a few Geelong Falcons boys, the Mathesons, the Witherdens of this world.
Yeah, obviously they got the Ballarat boys as well in McCluggage and Berry together.
Yep.
And Cedric Cox.
So they go again? Do they move heaven and earth for Curtis Taylor?
Well, at the moment I think he's in the sort of 15 to early 20s range, probably in that sort of bracket, maybe even 10 to 20. So it depends where their second pick is, I guess.
And how many rooms does Greg Swan have free at his house? Because Cameron Rayner's living there at the moment.
Well, no, he's actually moved out.
He's moved out? That's a revelation.
Yeah, he moved out. I've forgotten who he's moved out with now, but he's moved out because I just sat him on Future Stars the other day and did ask him that question, but he had been living with Greg. I think Greg just opens up his door for the first pick every year. If you're a rookie, maybe you don't get a run in Greg Swan's house. But look, Curtis is really good on the weekend. Bottom major in the third game, Sam Flanders kicked 4 goals from 18 disposals for Gippy. If his nickname's not Ned, then there's something wrong with this generation. Riley Collier-Dawkins had 21 touches for the Chargers over the weekend. A big-bodied midfielder who's shown a bit of class and promise across the year. An overager, Noah Ransworth, had 26 disposals and is in some better form. Mitch, he missed last year's draft basically after breaking his back for the Chargers. So he was a good chance to get picked last year. Didn't in the end. Probably lack of exposure really hurt him. So hopefully this year he can get a chance. And he's an example of the 19-year-old rule working well.
And what do clubs need to see from these 19-year-olds? Because it's a great initiative to be able to see these kids again if they haven't had a chance, like Noah last year, a number of players who just didn't get the chance in the 18 year to impress. Is it something these clubs are looking for as an X factor? Do they need to have a body of work behind them? What is the clubs and recruiters calling for?
They can't be more of the same, can they? They can't produce more of the same than they did in their 18th year. And I think it should be left to exceptions like Naranjith, who missed their whole year through injury, and you think, well, he's genuinely missed out on a chance to impress at all levels, really. It was round one or two that it happened. Didn't play school footy, barely played for the Chargers, missed out on Vic Metro, obviously. So I think it should be reserved and restricted for those guys who are out for most of the year rather than the guys who just don't get drafted and might be worth another run. Zach Butters had 24 touches, a small forward for... a small midfielder for the Western Jets. Buku Kamas had 22. He's a Western Jets prospect as well. Western Bulldogs NGA, 12 marks. He's going quite well as well.
Sawyer is best on ground for the Jets. So he's doing good things, Buku. He's on the radar last year, but he looks like he's gone to the next level in 2018.
Yeah, he's been good. He's pretty handy across halfback and understands the game well. So I think he gets a chance later in the year.
Over at WA, Will Hickmont was a name that jumped off the page because Adrian's an assistant coach with the Eagles right now, but eligible to go father-son to Carlton. I imagine the boys would be pretty keen to have him in the mix.
Well, he's been okay, yeah, and he's playing on the wing, was pretty good on the weekend from all reports over there in WA at the trial game, which I don't think was stunning in quality. I don't think they're going to be a great side this year, WA. They don't probably have those couple of guys who've stood out earlier in the year like Aaron Norton and Oscar Allen did this time last year. They really jumped up. That hasn't quite happened over there this year. So Luke English was solid. He's an inside mid. Jeremy Sharp, a 17-year-old prospect for next year, wingman, halfback. Dev Robertson, inside mid, did some good things. Damon Greaves was good at halfback. And Mitch Georgiadis, 17-year-old, stepped up as a kid who probably hadn't had much of a chat around him beforehand. So they were all good. And they were the main standouts from that game.
There's a name in the questions later on I want to get to, so we'll hold that for WA listeners, but exciting prospects on the WA page. Ian Hill, can you give us an update on where he's at? Because we spoke last week about the prospect of him joining the Hill brothers at the Dockers. Where's he at after that trial game?
Well, he got a knock early, and recently he actually checked himself into hospital after a game thinking he had concussion and feeling concussed. So he was off his game for a fair chunk of it, and then later in the contest... came good, but that wasn't probably Ian's best game from all reports. So, look, we'll wait and see on Ian. He's going to be a good player. I don't think it's a big drama for him to not be too busy in that one. Now, we're going to move on because the straw poll is something that we've brought on the podcast last year. I'm sure you're listening when you weren't at AFL.com, Mitch.
Love it.
And this is where we speak to a bunch of recruiters about an issue that's sort of affecting the draft pool or whatnot. And there's been lots of discussion about the struggles of key forwards in transitioning into the AFL. And we look at some of the guys who've come through the past four drafts to be in that category. Look at the tall players who've been top 12 picks since 2013. Tom Boyd, Paddy McCartan, Darcy Moore, Peter Wright, Josh Shackey, Jacob Wiedering, Sam Wiedemann, Harry McKay, Charlie Curnow, Aaron Norton, Darcy Fogarty last year. Now, at the moment, you could probably only say, look, this is very, very, very soon and very premature on a couple of those guys, but Charlie Curnow's the main tick at the moment.
Yep.
You'd have to say Tom Boyd has won his side a premiership, so you have to give him a tick for that. There's a few question marks in there. Aaron Norton looks like he's going to be a very good player. So does Darcy Fogarty. I think Sam Wiedemann's going to get there. Look, injuries and certain issues have sort of affected a lot of those guys.
And I like what Melbourne have done now. With Tom McDonald going forward, Jesse Hogan playing as a roaming half forward, it sort of allows of Sam Wiedemann to develop at his own pace.
Exactly right. And there's no rush on him. And I think that's an overriding thing that we should remember when discussing this as well, that we're not writing these guys off at all. And all of them, I hope, can get there. But it's just an interesting point, given this year's draft is so weighted towards taller types. So there's obviously Jack Lukosius, Maxim Benking, Bailey Williams, and Nick Blakey, who all might be in the top 10 to 12 picks, all 195 centimetres plus. That's pretty rare. And particularly the last couple of years, that's extraordinary, really, where there's been this dearth of tall prospects right at the top. So we thought we'd ask some key questions to recruiters. I spoke to five recruiters this morning, and we're going to go through them question by question because it's interesting just to get their views on whether the struggles of some of these talls in the last few years would affect their thinking heading into this year's draft. So I'll start with recruiter one on question one. The first question is, would the trouble that has faced some of the key talls in recent drafts be a factor in how you rank the key talls in this year's draft? And recruiter one said, definitely a consideration looking at what's gone before. You look at someone like Ben King with his craft and athleticism, and it's not going to matter for him, but perhaps there's a little question mark over Max now given the knee injury, but it's all about craft, athleticism, and also looking at who has the pick. So if there's a Melbourne club, this recruiter said, looking at those guys with early selections, you forget about the past ones that haven't worked and just go with one of them. So that makes sense to me. Now, recruiter two says it doesn't really matter too much, so there's a bit of consistency here. The game has changed a fair bit since Boyd and Shackey, since they were drafted. McCartan has obviously had his issues, and there's been others for other players as well. This recruiter says, I'm not sold on any of the tools at the top end of the draft, but it has nothing to do with the tools taken early in the past. So that makes sense.
Just on this question, is it now what we're seeing with the rucks in recent times? So a number of rucks, maybe because of the quality and removing previous drafts, but because they were held off second, third, a lot of mature ages, are we going to see this? And I guess this is the question to recruiters.
Well, I guess they've almost overcorrected in the rucks as well, haven't they? Like you get your Tim English, who's by far the best ruckman in his draft when he gets to pick 19, which is crazy stuff. And most people had him inside the top 10 in terms of talent.
Brody Grundy slipped, I think, and
he was
regarded as a top fiver in his year.
So it's almost like this overcorrection where they haven't quite found the right balance, but that's the way it goes. Recruiter 3, I'll give you the next two after this one. Recruiter 3 to that question says, you have to give it some thought, but it comes down to every facet in each player's makeup when you're ranking this year's group. Their progress might not have been as good as some may have expected, but you learn from what you do in the past. However, you can't be dictated by it, which I think is a good point.
Yep.
And Recruiter 4, what did he have to say? I'm assuming it's a he.
Well, there's one that really jumps out in one line here. It's about Shaqie and Wienering not playing on each other through the circumstance, and they should have. So.
Yep.
Saying it's, again, not much of a difference this year and whether he would overlook these tall targets or not. But that fact that Shaqie and Wienering didn't play on each other, was that an issue for you back in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, as recruiters said, there should be a priority to make sure they actually play on the AFL-like talent, to play on the other AFL-like talent. I remember that game. We went down to a camera down. We were hoping they played number one, number two against each other, and then buddy Kieran Collins got the job on Josh Shaqie. But nothing against Kieran. I did like him through his draft year as well. But that, as this recruiter says, we would have got to learn more about them had they played against each other. So that makes sense. What did number five have to say, RE, this question?
Not really. This year's draft profile definitely weighted to talls in the first round, but you're doomed to fail if you pick up the tall for the sake of it or because of what's happened in the past. So, again, this is similar to what the other recruiters have been saying. It's a pretty unique year with the bona fide talls with the exposed form right near the top. So, as you said, those names, they are jumping off the page right now and still in the frame for top 10 is what these recruiters are going off.
So there's a bit of consistency there in the question one, isn't there, that it's not really a factor. You shouldn't think about it too much when you're making your call. However, the next question is, you know, are there lessons to be learned from how you viewed them during their draft years? And basically, which I asked them, do you go back and look at your notes and say, hang on, I thought he was really good at this. Why isn't he able to translate that to the top level? Recruiter 1 said, there's always lessons. Our list manager, when looking at the performances of players around the competition, will come to us when a player isn't performing and see why we had him ranked so highly during his draft year or vice versa. There can be some red flags that appear in your notes about a player or maybe his mental makeup that you don't see as clearly until afterwards and once they're in the system. So that's an interesting one. Now, number two, mentioned that the defensive side has become more important. Now, I guess the game is always evolving, isn't it? And that's where a couple of those guys have been exposed since making the AFL system. Off this year's top tools, they're not all really competitive types, and this is what this recruiter says. Lukosius and the Kings, according to them, are mobile and more athletic, but not really that physical type. And maybe this recruiter says there's always been that little question mark with Lukosius. You know, he's a lead-up forward, but not the big, strong key forward.
And just one name as a 19-year-old this year, Asava Radigalea. Everyone talks about his defensive pressure and his defensive mindset. Is this going to need to come in to some of these keys now?
Because it's funny, isn't it, though? Because when you're rated that highly, you don't generally have to tackle, do you? And it's not a thing that young, good players do very much of.
Yeah. But when Asava slips down to pick 40, it's something he's had to work through. The VFL, he was playing on kicking the dew off grounds last year, and now he's burst onto the scene and first pick for Geelong now.
And he's been a real success story, hasn't he? So the interesting one in this one, and you know, are there lessons you can learn from the past? This recruiter says they could all fail. There's never any guarantees. So that's a good point. Number three just says you have to be patient as an industry on these taller guys. He said, I don't like the way they're being challenged now. They're still very young. It took Josh Kennedy until the mid-20s to start playing the type of footy he is now, which is a good point. All of the criticism and talk is hurting the land of the key forwards because, you know, overall it comes down to having absolute athleticism. So that's the view of that one. What about Recruiter 3 and 4, Mitch?
You can learn from it all.
4 and 5, I should say.
So Recruiter 4 saying you can learn from it all picks and all sorts of players. The thing about tools is that they can be really good or they can be completely useful as they can't play.
Useless, I think that's meant to be.
Sorry.
My fault.
That's all right. They can't help at all if they're not playing their role, so that's an issue. So, again, that comes down to the defensive mindset and what they can offer apart from their mark and kicks, I think. And Recruiter 5 saying a lot of the things are retrospective and that's how we learn and take things from drafts. Some of the tools who have struggled didn't have a lot to their game, but this year the Kings can flip it around and move to the other end. They can jump and lead. There's maybe a little bit of doubt over the physicality, but they have a lot going for them. Blakey and Williams now are also playing senior footy and exposed to that regularly. So just on that point, senior footy, we saw Tim English, that player you mentioned, he played Waffle Seniors the year as a 19-year-old before he was drafted.
Yep.
How important is that? So that you see, like Blakey and Williams, playing senior footy, they can get
it. Yeah, Lukosius as well. Like, you just get that sense of it, don't you? Because you see what they're going to be up against and how they're going to manage that. Does the ability of midfielders to make an impact earlier than KPP players become a factor in the recruiters thing? It's fair to say that every club basically said, no, it shouldn't make an impact into what you do.
Yep.
A recruiter one said, recruiting is a long-term view to improve your list. Trading is for the short term. And that maybe Sam Walsh is good enough to play straight away, but he's skinny, so maybe he might not be ready to go immediately. I think recruiter two had a pretty similar point. Might depend where your list is at. And it might just be that you need a midfielder more than a key forward or key back, but it shouldn't make a decision, an impact on your decision. I guess an interesting point, though, was that from recruiter three,
yep,
is that, you know, it's just a matter of, it's just a matter of, you're not drafting for just 1 year, you're drafting for 12, aren't you? And you're drafting to build a team. So, you know, you have to pick a tool at some point.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why some clubs do go with them early, because look at the way the draft has unfolded and the competition's unfolded. The best key forwards are always father sons or top 10 picks.
Yep.
Apart from Ben Brown, basically.
That's fair.
And there's not many other midfielders up there this year anyway, so that might have to take a toll just through chances. What does four and five have to say on that one?
Not so much. Midfielders can go and play in more spots. They could be a forward, defender, and obviously they can be used in different roles through the midfield. So that's a consideration that may see them being picked before others. But Ben Brown's name, again, comes to the fore. It's only about the exception of the rule that only the best key forwards are either early picks or father sons. So that's recruiter four. And to that question, recruiter five is saying, absolutely not. Lukosius should play round one next year. You'd think most of the tools would. Obviously, there's a doubt on that with Max King, but Ben should as well. So there's not that thought.
Yeah, okay. So there's a bit of a trend. It's funny how the recruiters tend to feel reasonably similarly.
Do they spend too much time together, these recruiters?
Groupthink. No, they don't talk to each other. That's why they listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
What are the most important attributes to look for in a key position player? And this was interesting because you always see the recruiters at games noting down their little score. Like, what are they actually writing down? Just tick, cross, or up, down, little arrows and circles and whatnot. So I wanted to know, what are you actually looking for a key forward? Are you looking for the goals? Because goals is like an end result, but is the mark, the goal, the recovery, what is it? So competitiveness, because they have to compete in the state leagues against men who are older and bigger from the start. This is recruiter one. So they need resilience to cope with that. The big man craft, footy smarts, and not dropping your bundle when it doesn't go your way. This recruiter said that Weeding was probably a good example of that when he went back and did the work and the VFL and has now come out pretty well from that. Athleticism came up from recruiter two. And I asked, what's the actual definition of athleticism? It's a very nice term, but what's it mean? So they said it's the ability to be competent overhead but mobile when the ball's on the ground. Endurance can be built once in the system. Footy IQ and leading patterns we look for. Contester marking is nice, but it's not the be-all and end-all. I actually mentioned Tom McCartan as the modern key forward, which was an interesting point. He said he's the best key forward in the draft last year and went in the 30s. I tend to agree, like... you know, it makes sense, doesn't it? That, you know, he's a worker. He uses the ball well enough.
Yep.
So for another club to say that about, you know, the Swans pick is a good one.
And Josh Kennedy name really jumps out from what recruiter two said there. So the ability to compete in the air but be mobile on the ground, that's Josh Kennedy from the Eagles all over, I think.
And look, the next one was, you know, power. Which is the ability to jump and recover quickly, straight line speed, being able to cover the ground. Some of the best at the moment have a good mix of endurance and speed, so that's always an interesting point. So, and the last couple?
Competitiveness and athleticism from recruiter four. The ability to go forward, have repeat efforts, get off your man and keep at your feet. That was always a query I had on Weedering, his pace. So recruiter four questioning whether Weedering had the pace to compete, and that's why maybe now we see him in the VFL while Carlton is struggling. And recruiter five saying athleticism again and the need to have some sort of agility. You need to come up at the ball and have the ability to turn around. You also need to have the genuine understanding of how to use your feet and be nimble. But perhaps most importantly is if you're playing as a key position player, you're athletically gifted, you need to be a quick thinker, sharp in the mind. So that ability to get up and back. That's one question I want to pose to you about Paddy McCartan, because at TAC Cup level, when he did all the good things to be drafted as number one, he was playing in the anti-density system where zones were in place, a certain amount of players couldn't be in front of him. Now you see him having to come up and back. It's something he may have struggled with in the AFL. Is that a concern?
Probably hasn't helped him, has it? And even speaking to a couple of recruiters on the weekend, they mentioned how the anti-density rules, you know, it's cruel to a couple of guys once they've actually made it to the AFL because they're just not used to what has been put out there. I understand it. It sort of clears it up and it gives forwards and backmen a chance to clearly show their skills.
Yeah.
But it hasn't always worked. Last question. We're going to fly through this last one. Who is leading the way now as the best tall in the 2018 draft? Recruiter one says Ben King. He can play at both ends, is equally as good as a forward or a back, maybe even the ruck at times. Seen him dominate at both ends of the ground. His durability is probably better than Max as well. And Max's sample size is clearly going to be smaller given his injury. Recruiter two says Max King. But then there's the risk with the knee. Described Blakey as, quote, an effing superstar. I can say that on this podcast because it's my show, Jack. And number three, said Jack Lukosius and Nick Blakey, with the Kings closely behind. Lukosius has the footy smarts that set him apart. Blakey might end up a real utility, but will start a really tricky forward. What do the last two say?
Recruiter four, Lukosius, he can play at both ends of the ground. A beautiful kick. Senior footy experience helps us judge him. Max's injury makes Lukosius just ahead. And recruiter five, Lukosius, again, senior footy coming to the fore on this one. A real sample of good games there. So not only this year, but last year in the finals, I think he jumped up, I think, four goals.
Four on debut. In the preliminary final, so not a bad little performance there from Jack. Look, that's the tools. We probably don't have to talk about him for a month now. We're just giving about half an hour on him. But look, we thought it'd be interesting to get a view from different clubs, different recruiters on how they assess this year's tall crop, given it is a year of tall prospects, and whether the past influences the present.
And I think the one that jumped out for mine there is not following the draft anywhere near as closely as you, Cal, is that you just draft what you need. So if a tall forward is there to be recruited, you just go and get him regardless of if you think he's ready for next year or 10 years' time.
Exactly right. Good point. Speaking of guns, we had a chat with Taran Thomas. Well, Taran Thomas joins us on the podcast. And Taran, it's great to have you on because you're probably the form player of the under 18 competitions around the country and obviously coming off a really good academy series, which we'll get to shortly. Thanks for joining the program. And how's your season been so far?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, not too bad. Pretty good so far, so happy with it.
What were your expectations going into the season? I mean, obviously there's a lot of hype and talk about you. Tell us about what your aims were heading into the year.
Just probably play for the academy, for the Tassie, just play my role, just do my thing for the team. Just mostly have fun. That's about it, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously the academy series has just been and gone, and Tasmania was a runaway success there, unbeaten, and you claim the medal as the best player in the championships. Tell us about your academy series and what do you feel you did well?
It was pretty good. The boys got up, so happy with it. Just happy that we got the win. Played good footy. I was glad to play a couple of touches, a couple of goals, but the team had done pretty good. So thanks for the team.
How have you found the transition going from playing local footy in Tasmania now to the academy and being involved in that system, Taran?
It's a bit different, like faster, bigger bodies for the local club. So yeah, it's a bit different, but I got used to it with other boys, so the boys got me into it. So it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, and now looking towards playing for the Allies coming up, what things are you looking forward to most to mixing with some of the best players all around the country from Queensland, New South Wales and some of these other players to really get the chance to play against the best?
Yeah, excited to play with them because I played against them in the Tassie, so I'm really looking forward to playing with them. Hope to just play a good footy and
So our listeners on this show, Taran, probably would have seen you play, but for those who haven't seen you play, do you want to describe yourself as a player? Where you think you play your best footy? Because I know over the last couple of seasons, we've seen you play at half-back, through the midfield, up forward as well. You kick plenty of goals through academy series. Where do you think you play your best footy and what do you think you do well?
I play mid-forward mostly, but I can play anywhere, hopefully.
Yep, definitely. I know. I think most people agree with that.
Yeah, I'll probably clean hands, good kick, good marking, And yeah,
that's it. Easy. Now, you've got an interesting background too, because you always haven't lived in Tasmania. Tell us about when you moved there and where from.
Yeah, I grew up in Sydney till I was, 10, 11, and then moved to Tassie. And then ever since that, stayed in Tassie.
What brought on the move, and how do you find it at the time? Were you into AFL at that point?
No, in Sydney. I played NRL for a couple of years. 6 years, I think, and then I played a game in Sydney, one AFL game. Dad got me into it, and then I liked that. I played 2 years there, and then I moved to Tassie, and then played rugby union for a year, and then I hurt the shoulder, and then had a year off of that, and then I played. Dad got me into AFL, and then my cousin Brett Mansell, he got me into North Launceston, and then ever since I just played footy.
Very nice. So, were you any good at the rugby sports? You probably look like you'd go okay with the ball in hand, dashing through.
Yeah, not too bad. I played fullback mostly, so yeah, not too bad. Like to run.
Yeah, I like to run. We can see that.
Growing up in Sydney and playing a bit of rugby, and then going to Tasmania where they don't have their own AFL team. Have you got a team you support, or is there a team that you love watching each weekend in the AFL?
At the start, I liked Sydney Swans because I used to live in Sydney, but now I just look for all the good players, or most of them, but all Indigenous boys now.
Who are your heroes in that sense? I mean, who are the guys that you've watched closely over the past few years to maybe take a few things from their game and put it into yours?
Probably mostly Sean Burgoyne.
Yep.
Mostly all them boys.
And have you had much to do with Sean? I imagine you might have spoken to him at
times.
I spoke to him
a couple of times.
Yep.
Been around my house, so yeah.
How's that been? Has that been a bit surreal? I think you probably share the same manager as well. I mean, has that been a bit of a surreal experience?
Yeah, it's unreal, yeah, talking to him. He's a good bloke, easy to get along with. He's an awesome bloke.
Now, we have to ask you about North Melbourne as well, Taran, because you're involved with the club's Next Generation Academy. When did that start, and how has that been for you?
It started probably a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I think. Got me over there. Oh, when I'm over in Melbourne, just call me up and just ask to go train with them or hang out with them. And then when they play in Tassie, they get me tickets, and I'll go in the change rooms and all that stuff, and then see how they go about the business.
So they're there on the weekend. They played the Greater Western Sydney, had another win. They've won 11 from their past 13 down there. They're doing good things down in Tassie. Their second game this year in North Melbourne. What were the experiences like? You said you've been in the change rooms. What are the things you sort of pick up when you're spending time with the North Melbourne boys?
Yeah, they're actually going all right. Well, liking how to play and all that stuff. When I go in the rooms, it's just an unreal feeling. Just being around the boys, their intensity and all that stuff, how they talk, getting ready and all that stuff.
And how have they been towards you? I'm sure spending time with them over summer, they would have spent a lot of time mentoring you and spending time teaching you about the game. Who are some of the guys that have jumped out and really put their arm around you to teach you about the AFL?
Probably Jed Anson. Got me on his wing and showed me, Tyson Ken and all that stuff, showed me what to do and all that stuff around training and around the club.
And you did spend some time there, as Mitch said, over summer as part of the Next Generation Academy, but also as part of the NAB AFL Academy and your sort of club placement. North has first call on you. They can match any bid that comes if they want to. I'm sure they're pretty keen on you, but would you like to go there?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it. I just don't mind who I go to. I hopefully get picked up.
Have you thought about that much, though, that option of heading to North Melbourne? Have they given you much confidence that they like you or given you any guarantees?
Yeah, a little bit, but don't really think about it that much. Just hope to play good footy. That's what I'm worried about.
Do you feel in a little slightly different position, though, I guess, to many of the draftee boys? And, many through the NAB AFL Academy and other guys who probably don't have a club they're associated with just yet. Every time your name's mentioned, you're mentioned with North. Has that sort of been a little bit different for you as an experience?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But just take it how it comes, really. That's how I think about it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's been so much talk about Tasmanian footy over this sort of last 12 months, and obviously the closure of a couple of TSL clubs and maybe only one draftee in the last couple of years too in Hugh Dixon. So do you sort of hope to change that this year and see it as sort of an opportunity for you guys to turn things around down in Tassie?
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, we've got a good couple of boys, so got the names spread out, so let's hope you play good footy and then go from there.
Can you give us a few names? We love hearing players. They've got the best insight when they speak about their teammates, their Tassie Academy boys. I'm sure Chase Jones, your captain from the Academy, is one. But is there a few others that we may not know too much about that you can give us some insight into that might find their name read out on draft night this year?
Yeah, I reckon Ryan Mantle will have a chance. Good insight and like, plays back mostly, but he's really good around the ground. A little small guy. Bit taller than Chase, I think. Probably Mitch Anderson. He's played back, small back.
Fraser Turner as well is going.
Yeah, Fraser.
Well.
Yeah.
So he's in that Allies squad. Just speaking of the Allies, before we do let you go, and what are you mainly looking forward to with the Allies? You had a taste of it last year as a bottom major. Now, I guess the responsibility lies with you as one of the top age guys and obviously coming in with some really good form. What are you hoping to achieve and show people for the Allies?
I just probably just play my role, do a bit for the team and just hope to play good footy, yeah.
Well, good luck. Well spoken. We've enjoyed having you on the show and enjoyed watching you so far this year and really looking forward to watching you play in the Division Thank 1 you. Carnival in the next few weeks. So good luck, Taran, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was Taran Thomas, and he was good, wasn't he, Mitch?
Looking forward to seeing how he lines up in this Allies squad. There's been a name last week, and there's a few good names. Really excited to see how he performs against some of the Division 1 kids because he's done it against the Division 2 kids. When he gets this step up, I think that's when recruiters are going to get the chance to see where he sits in the draft order.
He's softly spoken, but pretty quiet determination about him, I think, so I'm really looking forward, as you are. He's tall. I like the fact that he's tall and he can kick it, so he's... And he spent a bit of time with the Roo boys too, which is always nice. Now, he's one of 13 Tassie boys in that Allies squad that we mentioned just then. 11 GWS Academy guys, 6 from the Swans, 8 from the Lions, 8 from Gold Coast, and 4 from the NT. Any names jump out at you, Mitch, in that squad?
Well, Bailey Scott was one we discussed last week at Gold Coast. Hopefully when Nat's back on the program next week, she can have an update as to where his decision lies. Brisbane, they need these kids as much as anyone right now. But a couple from Greater Western Sydney jump off the page for me. Jacob Kozitski is a cousin of the Cozzy that played for St Kilda. Let's hope there was a cousin rule because the Saints could do with a bit more talent. Right now, Nick Murray is a name there as well. The brother of Sam Murray, who's doing good things this year at Collingwood, his debut season in the AFL, spent a year or two on Sydney's list. He could have easily been a Greater Western Sydney Academy prospect himself, but his brother Nick doing good things for the Murray Bush Rangers, so he gets a chance to show his wares at national champs level.
And watched him on the weekend too. He's a pretty dogged and maybe probably he's more a dour type of defender, but he's pretty physical and has a real crack, so we'll give himself a chance there. Matt Walker's athletic and having a slightly better run with injury this year, so hoping he can really show what he can do for the Allies too. There are a few good names in there, and obviously Nick Blakey is the star. Be really interested to see how he goes for the Allies. He didn't get a full run at it last year, so it'd be interesting to see where he plays, and maybe he does play on, maybe a King takes him at one point, maybe Ben King does take him at one point, maybe he goes in the midfield and does a few other things. So he looks like being a pretty special player, Nick, so I think he'd be determined to star in the next month.
Having followed this closely for the time that you have now, Cal, how important is it for Division 2 kids to get the chance now to go against the Division 1 kids? Because I remember years ago, you'd have the Division 2 guys, we'd see them star against lesser opposition, and then that's the last time you'd see them in that context again. But now, it's a great opportunity for them to put their name up.
Yeah, well, the Allies obviously only been going for a couple of years, so this is a chance for them to come together and be better prepared. They're playing a practice game on the weekend, a couple of practice games in Melbourne, Vic Metro and Vic Country Trials as well. So that's a test for them there. And the squad will be trimmed back from 50 to about 35, 36 players. So it's pretty cutthroat and you need to have your best players in there. How important is it? It's pretty important, yeah, because at the moment, clubs stopped sort of sending big recruiting groups to the Academy Series over the last few weeks because they just probably weren't getting that much out of going to them. So we know that for the National Division 1 Academy or Division 1 Championships, clubs send 8 to 10 recruiters. They have their full complement if they got that many to watch games. So It's really important for them as a time of year. It's important for every sort of prospect. It's the reference point, isn't it? The championships. How you win in the championships often defines your year. I remember speaking to Lockie O'Brien about this and last year, and he built himself up to play really well in the championships. It didn't happen for him, and then for the rest of the year, he felt like he was going to be defined by his championships. He's actually going quite well, Lockie. Maybe a little bit better than some people thought he would be. So it's not the be-all and end-all. It's not at all, but it's certainly in the mind of a lot of draftees that this is the pressure point of the year. And if you can go well, he really sets you up for a really big second half of the season to launch with some confidence. So it's an exciting time. Nat, looking forward to watching Matt Green from the NT. A few good guys from Tassie, as we mentioned before, with Taran himself, Chase Jones, Blair Rubach, a small forward, and a couple of other guys as well. So, yeah, a big period of the year to come. Look, we should get into some Twitter questions before we bore everyone out.
Well, starting in WA, Paul's asked, where do you see Jason Carter's draft range? And if Tom Medhat isn't taken in the national draft, can any club select him, or does Fremantle still have rights to him in the rookie draft?
So we'll start with Jason Carter, an NGA prospect, Indigenous players playing for Peel Thunder now, across to them, linked to the Dockers. I think he's a later selection at this stage. I don't think he's sort of going to cost the Dockers too much at this point. Tom Medhat is linked to Frio through his Iranian heritage,
okay,
which is an interesting one. They, under the rules, they can automatically list him as an NGA rookie after the national draft, should he get through.
Yep.
Such as the Tigers did last year with Derek Smith.
Yep.
So there's that sort of ability to do that for them. Wait and see if he's good enough to get to that point.
Kim, being a Saints fan, asks, with the Saints having no second or third round picks, should they look to turn pick 3 into maybe Port's 13 and 21, or keep pick 3?
I mean, they did a pick swap and deal with the Power last year. I'd be keeping pick 3 at this point. I always try and, I mean, these questions come up every year, and they're fair enough, and I'm sure that clubs will be thinking about it. But I say you keep your premium picks. They need it. They need a gun.
Especially this year?
They're going to get a gun at pick 3. They should get a king. I mean, look at their forward line. Look at their back line. I think that if you got either of the kings, you could pretty comfortably slot them into that group and hope that they're there for a decade plus. The Bayside boys would only have to travel down the South Road to get to Moorabbin. So I think they should go and keep that pick.
And maybe their good mate Austin Bradkey might be playing alongside them. Let's see.
There you go.
Chris asks.
A little bit of insight there, Mitch.
Potentially Bayside boy. So they might like to see maybe at least two of those together, maybe three if you include both King brothers. Chris asks, who's in the race to go pick number one with Carlton? So
for Carlton?
Chris has just given up.
The Lions have won a game, so that's it. look, the King boys are in there. I think Walsh is in there. And also Lukosius. They're the four, I think, at the moment.
Yep. Ryan asks, Cal, I know it's a while away, but do the Herd boys play footy?
I think they're down the track, so we'll wait and see how they're going. I think one might be next year, but sort of not on the radar at this point.
Matthew asks, is Bailey Smith making a run to be the best midfielder in the crop? Pretty elite numbers so far this season.
He's been unbelievable, has Bailey, and he's built himself up for a huge year, and he's delivered so far. He's certainly in that conversation. I think at the moment he's the second best in it in terms of midfielders, pure midfielders, behind Sam Walsh. And the group behind him are probably Jackson Hatley. Jai Cald was pretty good too. Others have Riley West right up there as well, but I think Bailey's in that top couple, yep.
Danny asks, any idea what the timeline is or could be for Tom Graham to line up for the Oakley Chargers? Also, what are your thoughts on Ben Cardamone as an NGA player for the Hawthorn?
Yeah, I'll start with Ben. He had 19 touches and 7 tackles on the weekend. I think he's a probably later / rookie potential. I'll ask you about Tom Graham. You're on the Tom Graham beat.
Yep.
What's the latest with him?
So today we're recording this on Tuesday. I understand he's going to train tonight for Oakley Chargers. So could play after this weekend's TAC Cup bye as soon as the end of this month. So
are you going to go doorstop him?
Let's hope so, because if I can get a camera crew, we'll be down there for sure, because it's a great story. And
yeah.
Mark Graham's pretty excited about what his son can deliver. Hope for his sake, it's Hawthorn.
Yep.
The last question from Tex, maybe he's asking because he's wary that the Crows might lose another Jake Lever. But who?
He's a keen listener of the show, actually, Tex. Oh, I've heard that he loves it.
He's a big media consumer, I'm told, Tex. So yep. Road of the Draft podcast could be high on his radar. Who are the key defenders?
You really reckon, Mitch?
Well, they got Tom Duda out of nowhere. Maybe
they got two first-round picks this year as well.
Lukosius, do they try and do the double into one one pick to try and get the best SA prospect.
They could do that. Maybe that's the Saints' question. Maybe if they got Melbourne's pick at the moment in their own. The problem is they're going to finish too high. And the way Melbourne's looking, they're going to finish too high too.
Well, Tex wants to know, are there any key defenders likely to be available in the first and second round? So he wants Lukosius in the first round. Who are the key defenders that can go in the first and
probably
second?
Probably none that have really sort of shot up and you say, pick me at that point. I actually find that key defenders come in as the year goes on. I reckon it always happens later in the year. You start to think, hang on, those sort of guys in the 25 to 35 range, they shorten a little bit, if that makes sense, because clubs start to say, actually, we need those guys. Anyway, I'm sure that'll develop as it goes. Caleb Graham's been pretty good for the Suns Academy again, already tied to the Suns. And Hugo Munn is a key position player, doing a few good things in South Australia.
Will Ben King finish his career as a forward or a back?
Oh, geez, you put me on the spot there. I think a forward, because he's going to be better than most of the key forwards that he goes to play with at an AFL club, just that he's had to play next to Max and in the same side as Max, who's it's very even between those two. We know he spoke to Max last week, who said he saw him as a defender.
Yep.
It's probably just because you've seen him play as a defender more, Max. Anyway, that's the Twitter questions done. Last segment of the show, Mitch's favourite, it's the song of the week. This one is by a band called Greta Van Fleet. I'm sure you're one of your favourites.
I need to hear it from your laptop in the next couple of days.
You'll hear it. I'll play it for you in the next minute. Highway Tune, it's called. They're like Wolf Mother. So they're from America, three brothers in a band and some other dude. They're like Led Zeppelin, basically. Yeah, cool. So they're pretty good. Anyway, that's just my send-off. And that's my song of the week. And that's the Road to the Draft podcast. Mitch, you've been terrific again. That's been a good show. Just hope everyone listens again next week when you're not here.
You might
be here, you never know.
I'll be listening for sure.
You've tried to usurp. Usurp. Nat Edwards, anyway. On that note, we finished terrifically again. I'm no good at closing out shows. All right, see you later. We'll be back next week.